Kia ora, I'm Maria. I'm Māori and Pākehā.
And I'm Kate, and I'm Iranian-Australian.
And you're listening to Being Biracial.
It's the podcast all about navigating the world as a mixed-race person.
We want to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on the unceded sovereign lands of the Boonwurrung and Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation.
We offer our respect to the elders of these lands, past, present, and those yet to come, and acknowledge traditional custodians from the lands where this podcast is reaching you.
Today we are going to be chatting to each other.
Welcome to episode one of season two of Being Biracial.
We are so excited to be back on the mics, chatting about being mixed race, chatting about the world, all of those things.
Since we last spoke, what have you been up to?
I have been in New Zealand. I went back to New Zealand. I didn't go home. Back to Invercargill, much to the chagrin of my family. But I went to a place called Rotorua, which is in the middle of the North Island. And it was a place that I hadn't been to before. Like, Rotorua is a place where there are a lot of Māori people. And I had never really experienced being in New Zealand surrounded by people that looked like me, surrounded by more people that looked like me than didn't.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. How did that feel?
It was actually amazing. It was amazing. And you could see it, like, not only in the people around you, but you could see it in, like, the architecture.
What do you mean by that?
You know those, like, information centres?
Yes.
And that every town has. The information centre in Rotorua was, like, kind of like a cross between a kind of colonial, for lack of a better word, style building, but it had Māori motifs on it. So there was kuru patterns all around the building. The shape of the building itself, shape of the entranceway, kind of mimicked shapes that you'd see on the marae. Yeah, it was just beautiful. And I didn't realise how kind of like healing being in a place like that would be.
And, like, something that you've talked about on the pod previously has been about how your Māori identity has kind of been formed in an Australian context in a way. Like, you've really come into your Māori identity just as I've come into my Persian identity through creating this project. So how did that play out while you were there and surrounded by these, I guess, other Māori communities, which probably would have given you imposter syndrome before but didn't now?
Yeah, so I was in New Zealand for my friend's wedding, and she's Māori, and I was kind of anticipating feeling, like you said, imposter syndrome, but that's not how I felt at all. I felt really, like, welcomed with open arms. I felt seen in a way that I hadn't been before. You know, I'd walk into a shop, there was this beautiful boutique, Ahu boutique, that I spent a lot of money at. But every time I walked in there, like, they would just be like, oh, kia ora, how you going? You know, and people would, say goodbye to me in Māori. There would be karakia, like prayer, on tables at cafes and restaurants. Everything. It was actually incredible.
Did your friend incorporate any Māori elements in her wedding?
Yes. So my friend and I, let's just call her C, we met in Australia probably about 7 years ago. And so we didn't know each other in the context of, you know, being at home. And, you know, 7 years ago, Maria, it was a very different bag of beans than now. And since, you know, C had left Melbourne, they've done a full immersion to their Māori course. At the University of Waikato. And so their kind of journey has really been accelerated by that. And so at her wedding, there were so many Māori elements. She spoke, her family spoke in Te Reo Māori. She sung, which was, like, made me cry. I was crying, like, the whole time. But out of pure happiness and excitement. And, yeah, it kind of brought our friendship to a plane that it hadn't been on before.
Oh, that's so lovely, Maria. Would you ever think about doing the immersion course? I know that's a big question.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, it's a full year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a full – and it's a uni – it's like a postgrad situation. And I spoke with C and a bunch of her friends who were there who also did it, who, again, made me feel so welcome. They were beautiful. They turned to me and they were like, do you know this song? And I was like, no, but if I did, I wouldn't sing to it. But they were gorgeous. But I suppose I was kind of picking their brains about it while I was there because I was like, wow, this could be a thing. But from their point of view, it was actually quite, you know, when they say immersion, full immersion, they really mean it from day dot. All of them kind of echoed the sentiment that it was quite an extractive kind of course. You know, you'd go home at 4 o'clock, you'd spend all day there, you'd go home at 4 o'clock, you wouldn't be able to do anything else. You'd basically have to sleep. And that would be amazing if I had money. I would love to do that if I did not have to like work to support myself. So knowing how, you know, how much energy and how much time you have to dedicate to it, I don't have that at the moment. Like I do really want to at some point in my life, but I'm just not in a position to be able to do that.
Yeah, future Maria.
Yeah.
Like the reality is that there's no time frame on it. And I feel as if you are even more, like using more and more today just in day-to-day life and around our friends and in the way that you write and communicate. And so like you're already on the journey and that can just be a future point.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, as extractive as they said that going and doing that course was, they got that back tenfold. And you can tell, you know, when you're around them and the way that they do everything in their lives has been changed by going to that course. And seeing that, I thought I would be like jealous. You know, we don't like to feel jealous, right? But, you know, if I'm being honest, I thought that I would be jealous. And I wasn't. I was just so surprised myself. I was just so happy that they got to experience that and that they got to, you know, carry on Te Reo Māori in their families. It's amazing.
I feel it so deeply because I feel like I have kind of been doing a 1 month long Persian immersion course because my mum's sister, my aunt, is here staying with me for a month and I've been spending a lot of time with her and my mum. And I'm in the midst of it at the moment where I'm having a small break from family time to record this episode. But it's been so nice just from a language perspective because they're speaking in Farsi to each other all day, every day. And it's been kind of cute because in a way, sometimes my mum tries to speak to me and it's really hard because I can understand so much more than I can speak. And so it's not really a conversation. But in this context, like her and her sister just want to sit around gossiping all day about like some third cousin's grandparents' like love story, which is great. I'm so here for that level of family goss. I'm getting the extended family tree history and gossip, which I'm really appreciating. But it's been really nice because then they're talking to each other and then I can just be surrounded by Farsi all day, every day. And that feels really nice. And it changes the way that my brain works because then all of a sudden I start thinking in Farsi. Like it's just as quick as that. And that, of course, is helped by the fact that I've studied Farsi at uni and like I spent 3 months in Iran where people were only speaking to me in Farsi. And so like I definitely have that base, but it's been really, really cute to have that experience. It is tiring sometimes because they do like stop conversations and they are like, because I'll be laughing along and then they'll be like, so what did we just say? And then they'll ask for a direct translation mid-conversation. And so I'm just, when I say I'm in immersion Farsi classes, like I'm serious about it. Because
that's so savage. They're like, pop quiz time.
I know. And then I'll reply and say, oh, I understood this element and this element. And then, oh, but I didn't understand that word. And then that word will be something like savings account. because of course so much family gossip revolves around money.
Money.
But in what context do I need to know savings account? Not here, not now, not ever. And so it's really funny also, or I'll be a bit taken aback and say, oh, I don't know that word. And then it'll turn out that that's the term for like your great aunt's sister, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I've been feeling very embraced by my Persian side in the last month. Very wrapped up, sometimes very tightly, sometimes basking in the warmth, sometimes not. It's been very cute.
We're going to unpack that at a later date. It's, you're right in the thick of it. You're still processing.
Yeah, I really need a good moment to think about all of the lessons that have been taught during this time. And lucky, we have an entire season of being biracial to unpack it. And actually, one of the things that we're going to do different this season is every second episode is actually going to be Maria and I chatting. So we are going to keep having guests on Being Biracial. We just think it's so important to bring other perspectives and other mixes into the conversation. That's the core of what we do. That's the core of what makes us feel like we're in community in a way. But we do want to create more space to talk about some of the ideas and expand on some of the ideas that get covered. So it is going to sound a little different, but we hope you like it.
Yeah, evidence suggests that you guys think that we're really cool and you want to listen to us talk. So we're, you know, what we're here to do is give the people what they want.
Oh my God, I just rolled my eyes out of my head. Oh my gosh.
Also, while you were chatting, you also dropped an accidental Taylor Swift reference. So we're bringing up the accidental Taylor Swift references, or not so accidental. What was actually my, what was, you said love story. I was like, let's start a counter.
Yeah, I think we really have to address the elephant in the room, which is Maria and I went to the Eras tour and we can't stop talking about it. And we know it is not related to being biracial, but it is deeply related to our souls.
Yeah, yeah. It just, you know, the Eras tour, it just is incredible and so joyful. You know, I feel like the last time we spoke to you guys, we were talking a lot, especially in the back end of the season, about joy in our lives. And holy shit.
I cried so many times. Maria just has about 35 videos of me being like, holy shit, oh my God, and just sobbing.
Literally sobbing. Just to be in a stadium with 96,000 people watching somebody do something that they are literally put on this planet to do. Like,
it was absolutely phenomenal. And it was like, when we're talking about community, like that felt like joyful, pure, sparkly community in a way that so often, like it was in the MCG, 96,000 people. Ordinarily, I go to the MCG to watch AFLM. And so let me tell you, it felt like a very different experience. And it was phenomenal. We were chatting to everyone around us. There was a 14-year-old girl and her dad in front of us, all dressed up like with, you know, lyrics printed on the back of her sparkly dress and all of that kind of thing. And it just, the irony of a 14-year-old and me, a 34-year-old, singing about being 22 is not lost on me at all. Loved it so much. We are like in the cult of Taylor Swift. Maria is like deep in the cult of Taylor Swift.
A bit too deep, actually. We don't need to talk about it.
So deep. And so, yes, accidental song lyrics are definitely going to continue because we can't stop feeling it. And I don't want to stop feeling it because when do we get to, as you said, feel pure joy?
Like, I feel like it's, I had a similar experience when I went and saw the Barbie movie. And I also have to acknowledge that both of those things are like very much like white people led type things. But also at the same time, I'm like, just let me feel joy.
And I think it's okay. Like, it's for me, just simply, I need some moments where I can just, yeah, zone out and feel colorful and happy and not have to be thinking about it through a critical race theory lens.
Yeah, because the world is pretty fucking harrowing right now. Pretty fucking bleak.
Exactly. And so for me, she is escapism embodied and I'm okay with it. And I think I'm willing to put all the white privilege stuff to the side when it comes to Taylor. And one of my favorite things that happened was we are so tired. We've just like walked with 100,000 people from the MCG to Flinders Street. We are like getting on our train. We're thrilled. We get a seat on the train, winning. Yes, nailing it. And then we sit down next to like two other POC women and one of them pulls out her phone.
Oh my God. She pulls out Facebook. An auntie's Facebook.
And her auntie works at the MCG and has posted a photo at the concert. What does it say, Maria?
So nice to see Taylor Smith tonight.
And yeah, ethnic auntie gonna ethnic auntie all day, every day.
Taylor Smith.
I'm definitely in my celebrating moment because I'm going from Taylor Smith almost directly into Nowruz. So Persian New Year is on the 20th of March this year. So the day to start growing my wheatgrass is fast approaching.
Oh, are you stressed?
I'm actually quite stressed. I actually was at the market today and I looked to see if one of the old lady seed sellers had wheatgrass because I haven't done my annual Bunnings trip to buy my wheatgrass seeds. But yeah, she didn't have any wheatgrass and I have put the date in my calendar. So one of my Persian friends, we always talk about our wheatgrass growing. I've talked about her on the pod previously. We always talk about our wheatgrass growing and whether it's successful or not, whether we're using lentils or we're going the OG wheatgrass seeds because you can cheat. I know people might not know you're cheating, but I mean, you personally know. So I don't know. Is it worth it? We can't tell. But she asked her mum for me what the date is that I need to grow my wheatgrass on because last year my wheatgrass was very successful, but it did start to Nowruz goes on for some weeks. And so you need it to be in prime leafy green moment for the duration of your half seen table. And so last year it got a bit brown towards the end. So she asked her mum. Her mum lives in Canberra. So her mum said, adjust for your climate. And I said, I don't know what that means, but I'm just going to start on the same date that your mum does. So the 5th of March is the date on which the wheatgrass seeds are going to start being grown. And lucky for you guys, our new podcast is going to start from March. And so you get to follow the trajectory of my wheatgrass progress too.
Is it going to go brown on the table? Will it go moldy before it even starts? What's going to happen? Tune in here to Being Biracial.
I was thinking that I should get my mum to do our fortune because one of the things that you do for Persian New Year is called Hala Hafez, and Hafez is a poet, an Iranian poet. And so there's a fortune-telling aspect where you kind of like put your hands on the book and, you know, think about a question or whatever it might be and then open the page and then that's your fortune for the year and that's a New Year's tradition. So maybe we have to do that on a future episode of Being Biracial.
I feel like I would be too scared. What if it's like you will die on this day?
No, so here's the thing about Hafez. First of all, an ancient poet. So a lot of his solutions for things revolve around drinking wine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that crosses over with Taylor Swift nicely.
And second of all, it's all in Farsi and it's all in the Shakespearean English version of Farsi. So it's highly open to interpretation. And so if you are my mother and like a good, you know, story, it often is very related, like incredibly related to what has happened to you in the last year because she is translating it and we can't fact check it. So don't worry. It will be like, because my mum loves you so much, it'll be something along the lines of, Maria is the most wonderful human and my favourite host of Being Biracial, not her daughter.
What if she says savings account and you can't translate it?
Hafez was concerned about your savings account. That's true.
Is that the poetry that's in Threads?
Yes, yes, you're 100% right. So Maria and I have been working on a very exciting project in collaboration with Melbourne Museum and also the Immigration Museum since we last made the podcast.
Yeah, super exciting. We applied to be part of their Culture Makers program and were completely like excited and happy that we got it.
Yeah.
And as part of that, we created this work called Threads.
Yeah, and so I've been kind of describing it as an immersive digital stop motion. Basically, they have a room in Melbourne Museum called the Learning Lab, which is one of those rooms where they have projections on all of the walls and also the floor, and the sound travels around the room. So I think it was really interesting to kind of think about how we take the things that we talk about in the podcast and use them in this very different setting, but have it have the same feeling, like feel very much like a Being Biracial episode, even though it's entirely different.
Yeah, it's actually so different than anything either of us had ever done before. And when it was pitched to us, it's like, oh, you know, we have the space and it would be so cool to make something with you guys to go into the space. It was quite daunting to be like, can we do this?
Yeah, so Maria actually made a diorama. She cut up an old shoebox and literally made the three walls and the floor so we could visualize how things would move around it, because we just could not.
I actually forgot about the diorama.
And then it was really cute. She also made us these worksheets with the like walls and the floor on them so that we could like design and do like little scribbles of what we wanted to create and even conceptualize how you have images move around a room.
We started off, obviously I made the diorama. That was quite a hilarious exercise thinking about it now. But we started off by writing a script, which is, again, like quite a peculiar exercise outside of what we do. Like we, you know, talk shit on a podcast. We talk to people about being mixed race. We write grant applications and copy for our website.
Many grant applications.
Yeah, but that is really, really different to creative writing. And I honestly, I don't know about you, Kate, but I hadn't written creatively since I was at school.
No, not at all. And it was actually fascinating because we decided really early on that we were going to both go away and write two separate scripts. Because one of the problems is that sometimes we're so used to collaborating that all of our ideas merge, and we really wanted to have a sense of like Maria's voice. Her literal voice was going to be in the room and my literal voice was going to be in the room. And so, yeah, one of the tools that we used was just simply starting two separate creative writing pieces and then trying to merge them together. And it was odd because they were kind of similar.
Yeah, we showed up with our pieces like, oh, here you go, like, you know, kind of like handed them over. And then as I was reading Kate's, I was like, oh, there's quite a lot of similar themes here to mine. And then when it came to merging them together, I guess like one of the things that we brought up in common was about, you know, creating culture through New Year's practices.
Yeah.
For me, Matariki, for Kate, Nauruz.
Yeah. And it felt really nice that we had focused on that independently. Kind of like when the day before we went and saw Taylor Swift.
Taylor Smith.
In the exact moment, like literally the same moment, we were both looking at the sky. And I took a photo of the sunset and was like, it's giving lover vibes. And at the exact moment that I texted that to Maria, you texted me.
Yeah, I went out on my balcony and I was like, oh my God, the sun looks so cool. And I texted her and I was like, tomorrow we'll be watching the sunset at Taylor Smith.
So that's what it felt going through the creative writing process with you.
yeah, just kind of like magically aligned in a way that is like kind of bananas.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But also it was hard for me. So one of the differences that we noticed in what we'd focused on was mine was very place-based and yours was much more lyrical. It was. Yeah. You looked like it wasn't, but it was.
Yeah. I think groove is in the heart, you know? No. But maybe I've just been writing sad girl poetry in my journal all these years. And it just really came out on the page, you know?
So then when we like merged the two scripts together, like you had to make it yours set a bit more in place and I had to make mine a bit more metaphorical and
rhythmic, I think.
Yeah, rhythmic, absolutely.
So, you know, we wrote the script. While we're writing the script, I'm constructing this diorama to try and visualize how we're going to storyboard this, because the next thing that came around was visuals.
Yeah, and I think for us, the whole concept behind Threads is that it's all about the ways that you reclaim culture and identity. And one of the things that was really important for us, as you kind of just mentioned, is like, of course, to talk about specific things like Nauru's traditions and Matariki traditions, but also to think about big and small ways. I feel like that's something that we've kind of thought about a lot in the process of creating this podcast.
Yeah, the kind of everyday reclaiming of culture that you wouldn't necessarily stamp and be like, I have reclaimed my culture. It just happens.
Yeah, and I think for us, when we were thinking about then how you translate those stories into visuals, that was also a really fascinating process, because we basically, as we always do, collected random things from our house. And so I brought along some like paintings that I'd done and some like Persian fabrics that I have around my house. I brought in the Hafez book, and then you brought in
a cushion that my mum had made, my ponamu, so my green stone that I wear all the time. I brought in a book of threads, of literal threads, that used to belong to my nana, my mum's mum, and a few other bits and bobs we brought in. And, you know, when you're working with a place like Melbourne Museum, it's kind of like, what is possible with this?
Everything.
Yeah, it turns out quite a lot. And so, you know, we had these kind of physical elements that reflect both of our art styles. And then we also were able to translate some of those everyday objects that we brought in, like the cushion that my mum had made, like the book of poetry. And we were able to take photos of them with their really fancy camera. In some instances, print them out and use them to collage with. And in some instances, you know, request that they be digitally, you know, kind of imposed over some film footage that had been taken. And kind of incorporating all of these different elements that reflected not only our individual art styles, our art styles together, our kind of aesthetic together, but also like our family through these physical things that we had brought from home. You know, it was such a joyful process.
Yeah, and I think now that we're having this conversation, I guess I'm also thinking about the ways in which we learned through season one a lot about how other mixed race people approach their artistic practice. Like I'm thinking of Elijah Money and I'm thinking of Marco, who both work in very different mediums, but both spoke to us really in depth about how they kind of like approach culture in really nuanced ways. And it doesn't have to be literally a video about being biracial. It doesn't have to be that. Mm. There can be like small little nods, and you can incorporate the tiny moments as well. And that was really special because it was kind of full circle. We learned so much from all these conversations we had. And then because we haven't historically had an artistic practice, like a physical artistic practice together, we got to incorporate that to make threads.
And it's so cool. We've cried a lot during this process because it's kind of like, wow, we made this. Crazy. It gets to be in the Melbourne Museum. And like one of my friends was over from Aotearoa recently. I took him along to see it. He cried. I got him.
Yeah, I took my mum and my aunt. Of course they cried. We also, like, it's one of three videos in this space. And of course I wanted to see him multiple times. So we were just like sitting in there. And it was really cute actually, because the images and the things rotate and move around the room and the space, and our voices move around the space. And like the text is our handwriting. It's so deeply personal. But then also I just get to watch about 30 kids run around and chase things in this room. And maybe they're taking some of it in, maybe they're not. And quite simply, that doesn't matter. As if it is a visually beautiful experience for them and it is a joyful space, I am happy.
Yeah, big time. And yeah, like even though it's deeply, deeply personal to us, like we can't control how people consume something that we've created. Like we can't control how people consume the podcast as well, right? And so like being able to kind of let go with that and to see, you know, it just be there. It's amazing. It's actually incredible. I can't believe that we created something like that. Well, I can.
It's also fun because we are going to be running some workshops in the space for young people in March. And so I think it will be interesting for us to also hear their reflections. And I think something we can discuss in a future episode definitely is, yeah, what young people think about the work and how it makes them think about their own identities or not.
Yeah, exactly. I just really appreciated the chance to do something that was kind of outside of our normal artistic practice. Like it felt like a challenge, and to, you know, kind of translate what we do here in this audio space. You know, we've been able to translate that to live events and stuff like that. But to translate it into something that is completely different to what you and I do separately as artists and what we do together was just so bloody fun.
Yeah, it's interesting because that actually really relates to an event I went to recently where I saw one of my favorite authors, Maxine Beneba Clark. She's actually based in the West Side in Melbourne, so woo! Shout out to Maxine. And she wrote one of my favorite books, The Hate Race, which you haven't read, have you?
I haven't read it, but I just picked it up from Savers the other day.
Oh my gosh!
So tell us what it is about.
Yeah, so it's a memoir. And it's really about her experience of growing up in the western suburbs in Sydney, actually. Yeah, and kind of navigating otherness through the lens of like baby Maxine. So it's very much charting her childhood in many ways. And she, when she wrote the book, she explicitly wanted to focus on experiences of racism. So she actually spoke about it at this event that I went to where she was talking about adapting it because her book, The Hate Race, has now been adapted into a play, which is going to be on at the Malthouse Theatre until the 17th of March.
I thought I saw that advertised. And then when you said it was a memoir, I was like, but how?
Yeah, so she has been going through a six-year process. I know, to adapt her memoir into a play and, you know, like COVID years through that. But it's really fascinating because I feel like her artistic process, like she was speaking a lot about how it's really hard to go from a memoir to a stage show. And then I was thinking, while I was listening, of course, because we're humans and we always think about ourselves, I was thinking about how we have gone from having a podcast to creating this like immersive stop motion. And how, yeah, it's a really challenging thing to skip between mediums. It's really tough.
And it's not like Maxine doesn't write fiction, because she does write fiction.
Yeah, she's a poet as well, and she is an illustrator. She does kids' books. She kind of does everything.
She's got a really wide breadth of practice. But plays, that's a whole different bag of beans.
Yeah, and she said that it's interesting because it was like a process. Creating the memoir was like a process of trying to step out of her memories and think about how she was going to tell her story and how she really wanted to, even though the focus was racism, like she really wanted to also focus on humor, which I love. I was like, being biracial mantras, yeah. Maxine, yes. Maxine is not biracial, just to start with. Let's just acknowledge that from the beginning. It's just she just creates this work that I think deals with identity and the realities of growing up black as the child of migrants in a predominantly white society. And so it's very relevant. Many of the themes are really linked to what we talk about. And so she said with a stage show, though, like when you write a memoir, you're really thinking about how it's kind of like a very introspective process when you read. So you're like creating with that in mind. But when you're creating theatre, it's really about escaping into another world.
Yes.
And creating a whole collective experience for people and for people in a room to experience things together. And I think that's something that's interesting for us to go from podcasting where we're in your ears, wherever you're listening, to going into an immersive space, or when we do live podcasts, when you're in a room with people and you have incidental chats around the topics. It's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, that's really, really fascinating. I think stepping out of your memories. Ooh.
I know. And just accepting that, like, our bias and our experience and all of that kind of thing. Like, when we tell stories, for instance, about things that have happened to us, we're coming to it with the best intentions to tell you exactly what happened, but there's also a process that, of course, it is our memory of that experience. It is not the experience.
And like, it's like, as opposed to telling the story of your experience, inviting other people to experience it alongside you.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, I loved it because at the very end, like, her books are on the Victorian syllabus. So one of her poetry books, Foreign Soil, and also The Hate Race, have been on the Victorian syllabus for a few years, and there were some students there at the talk that I went to, and they asked her, like, if she had any tips for them as young writers, and she said, like, I really hope that we as a society don't get locked into wanting POCs to just talk about their trauma. That's something that we've talked about on the podcast before, of course, but also just letting people create what they want to create for creativity's sake. And so for me, that's kind of a mantra for us going into season two in some ways.
I love that. I love that so much. I am going to go buy tickets to see The Hate Race, actually, unless it's already sold out.
No, it's not already sold out, and I'm actually going to see it soon. So we'll talk about it on the pod.
Yeah, and I've got to read my book now that I've got. Foreign Soil is the one that I've read already and that I already own. Yeah.
Okay. Maria is getting back into her reading era.
Yeah, because my reading era was really tainted. It's been really tainted by fan fiction. So Kate bought me Yellowface, and I am reading that. I did really go in on hard mode and try to annotate it, which I now want to immediately. Yeah, but my annotations are so dumb. It's like, lol. That's funny. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Put it away. Put the pen away. Put the pen down. Just read the book. Yeah, so maybe this year will be my reading era. Who knows?
I hope so. It's also definitely, we're about to enter our comedy festival era.
Mm-hmm. Super excited. I've actually booked a bunch of shows.
Of course you have. You always overcommit yourself during comedy festival.
I really went a bit hard. We're going to see Rose Matafeo.
Oh!
At 9 p.m. though. That's kind of past my bedtime.
Yeah, and we're also going to see Brown Women Comedy.
Yep, that's a collective of, you guessed it, brown women doing comedy. Super, super excited to see that. I'm seeing a couple of New Zealand comedians as well, because I've got to.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
Support him. And we're going to go and see Lizzie Hu as well, which is exceptionally exciting because we're also going to be speaking to Lizzie Hu.
Yes, the next episode we are going to be speaking to an incredible comedian, somebody who is hosting the Melbourne Comedy Festival Gala. Yeah, she's doing that, but also she's on Being Biracial. How good?
Absolutely wild.
So this season we're sticking to our usual Being Biracial bi-weekly. So
yes, I didn't think she was going to say it. I thought she was going to say fortnightly and look me dead in the eyes, but she did it bi-weekly.
So yeah, we're keeping to that schedule. So yeah, next episode is going to be Lizzie Hu.
So excited.
It's very cool. It's very, very cool. Something else that is very cool is that we are putting on an event that you guys can all get tickets to and come along to.
Very exciting. We actually have a few things in the barrel. One of them is at Melbourne Museum. We are going to be speaking at the Nocturnal event that they have on in March. I believe it's the 14th of March.
Yeah, that's right. So we're doing some artist talks about threads. The theme of Nocturnal in March is Worlds Apart. So our little piece about reclaiming culture is very much on topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is super exciting. You can get tickets on the Melbourne Museum website. But our very, very exciting event is with The Round and the Wheeler Centre. And who are we going to be chatting to?
So Aurelia St. Clair, who is an incredible West Side comedian, who you probably know from Instagram because their content is so good. So good. But yeah, also someone that we're seeing at the comedy festival. So I'm excited for all of those worlds to converge for us. Getting to see their show, getting to interview them. They're going to be doing a little bit of a comedy set as part of our event. But also we are chatting to AFLW champion Darcy Vesio.
Beep, 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 beep.
Which, yeah, look, I texted my dad about it. So if you don't know, I am a Carlton supporter and I have been my entire life.
Wait, is that the team that Darcy's in?
Yes. Okay. Maria.
I'm actually going to have to watch AFLW. Well, four-hour event.
But it's not on right now.
Cool.
Okay. So Maria's going to do some research before our event. But I personally am a huge Carlton fan. That is Darcy's team. Great. Good.
I'll write that one down. Yep.
And have been my whole life. It's like what me and my dad used to do when I was a kid is we would like come into the city and go and watch, at that time, AFLM matches. But now, you know, AFLW matches because we're moving with the times. And yeah, I sent him an email because that's how we communicate. Mm. And I was like, oh, you should come to this event. And he was like, oh my gosh, it's a bit of a coup to get Darcy Vesio. And I was like, yes, it is a bit of a coup. And then, of course, he went into a detailed description about how in like the first season of AFLW, he had been like, you need to get their autograph. Like had been like really pushing me to like get a photo with Darcy. And I was at that stage, like in my late 20s, and my dad, it was like I was 13, and you best believe I got that photo, and you best believe it was mortifying. So it's really exciting that we get to speak to Darcy on stage.
I hope that they remember that.
I hope that they don't remember that, because it would probably be being like, Dad, stop, you're embarrassing me. But just as a 28-year-old.
Amazing. So being biracial at The Round, supported by the Wheeler Centre with Aurelia St. Clair and Darcy Vesio, is on the 21st of March. Go and get your tickets on the Wheeler Centre website, on the Round website. Super, super excited. We are also going to be releasing the audio from that. So it's technically a live podcast event.
Yeah.
So you'll get that on the feed as well. But we are so excited. 2024.
What a year. What a time.
We're in our season two era.
But yeah, if you want to come along, see us in person for anything, yeah, just go to our Instagram, Being Biracial Podcast, and yeah, link in bio, all the tickets, all the details there. And I think that's kind of it.
Yeah, episode one of season two, over.
I thought you were going to make one last, like, Taylor Swift reference. Like, are you ready for it? Thank you so much for listening to Being Biracial.
This podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by us, Kate Robinson and Maria Birch Moranga.
The music that you are listening to is by the Green Twins, and we want to thank them so much for letting us play their amazing song, Take It Slow.
We acknowledge that this episode was created on the lands of the Boonwurrung and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.